broadcasting worldwide via the internet from Lakeland, Florida. This is Whitfield Radio's True Believer program. And now, here is your host, the founder and president of Whitfield Theological Seminary and senior pastor of Christ Presbyterian Church in Lakeland, Florida, Dr. Kenneth G. Talbot.
Welcome to today's show, and thank you for your prayers and support of this ministry. Today we are being joined by Dr. John Barber, pastor of Cornerstone Presbyterian Church, a church in the Presbyterian Church in America denomination. We'll be joined by Dr. Barber right after this break.
Are you considering seminary education? Let Whitfield Theological Seminary provide your educational needs. Whitfield offers master and doctoral degree programs through distance education in ministry, theological studies, biblical counseling, and Christian education. You can complete your studies for the ministry or other church vocations in the privacy of your home in conjunction with your local church. For students who have never been to college, check out the Bachelor of Divinity degree program. Whitfield also offers lay study programs. Go to www.whitfield.edu for additional information. Remember, Whitfield offers classical Reformed theological education. Whitfield Theological Seminary, training a new generation of ministers around the world to disciple the nations in the theology of the Reformation.
Today's show, Christianity and Culture, Christianity's Mission to the World. Dr. John Barber is pastor, as I noted, of Cornerstone Presbyterian Church and instructor at Reformed Theological Seminary of Nairobi. His educational background is he has a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from Florida Atlantic University, the Master of Arts in Religion degree from Westminster Theological Seminary, Philadelphia, the Master of Divinity from Yale Divinity School, and the Doctor of Philosophy from Whitfield Theological Seminary. Dr. Barber is author of two books, one entitled Earth Restored, Calling the Church to a New Christian Activism, and the other is The Road from Eden. His religious vocational background is he has been an evangelist with the Presbyterian Evangelistic Fellowship, a church planter with the Potomac Presbytery of the PCA. He also hosted a nationally syndicated radio show entitled America in Focus and was a writer and a host also on a radio show with Dr. Bill Bright of Campus Crusade for Christ. Dr. Barber, it's good to have you as a guest on True Believer here at Whitfield Radio.
Absolutely great to be with you, Dr. Talbot. It's a great pleasure.
Dr. Barber, tell us about your book. First, let's begin with Earth Restored. That was one of the earlier books you had written, and then let's take a look at The Road from Eden.
Well, Earth Restored came out back in 2002, and really came after many years of thinking about the issue of Christianity and culture, and something that began back in my formative years back at Westminster Seminary, when I was sitting under instructors who were talking about the holistic aspect of Reformed theology, and I began thinking about the relationship of that to the arts and the sciences and politics and various other and sundry things. And many years later, as things began to crystallize in my mind, it was about that time that a book came out called Blinded by Might. I don't know if you remember that title or not.
Yes.
It was by Cal Thomas, and it really was a broadside against the conservative political movement at that time that up to that point had made many inroads into American culture and had done many, many positive things, but at the same time had not quite done everything that it had hoped to achieve. People like Jerry Falwell, D. James Kennedy, Tim LaHaye had spearheaded the Moral Majority and other various and sundry organizations such as Concerned Women for America. And things were at sort of a boiling point there in the 80s, particularly when Ronald Reagan was president. As we came in over into the Clinton administration, it seemed like things began to cool just a little bit, and people like Cal Thomas began to take a another look at the progress that the movement had been making, or regress in their own viewpoint, and took a 180 degree turn. And as I read the book, Blinded by Might, I could tell right away that there were huge gaping fallacies in the book.
Mm-hmm.
From a theological perspective, from a historical perspective, knowing some of the men, such as D. James Kennedy, personally, that these men were not blinded by some personal ambition to rule the roost politically, but really had a heart for our nation and a heart for theology in application to the cultural issues of our day, I one day just decided to sit down and just start writing. And I really didn't have a particular agenda in view as far as a book. I just began writing. And thoughts just began flowing out of my head, and next thing I knew I had a chapter, then two chapters, three chapters, and then finally 15 chapters. And that became the book called Earth Restored. And since then, actually there's been another book called America Restored, which is a condensed version of Earth Restored that Coleridge Ministries got a hold of a few years ago and put out on their broadcasting systems, and many, many people picked it up and apparently were able to use it as a tool to finding their way back to a biblical center in the whole culture war issue. And so I'm very, very glad that America Restored was able to do that. So that's a brief history of Earth Restored.
Yeah, it's a time frame, thinking back into those days when I was being fairly active. The context of talking about a biblical world and life view was really kind of new and alien from the past and history of the church. It's like the church had lost its moorings and its way. And then when dispensationalism and other things began to grow within this country, you heard phrases like, don't polish the brass on a sinking ship, and, you know, politics is a dirty thing, Christians shouldn't be involved in. But then came a retuning of things, but yet not really based on a biblical or sound theological basis. And I think that's something that you've addressed well in the fact that in order for us to approach a Christian cultural perspective of how we are to transform our world and life and our culture, it's got to be based on a theology that is founded in the Word of God. And I think the book was an excellent book.
Well, you know, in a conversation I had some years ago with Tim LaHaye, as a matter of fact, on this very issue, and of course, as you know, Tim LaHaye is quite a strong dispensationalist. He referred to himself as a Christian patriot, and that was the justification for his involvement in cultural issues with respect to Christianity. And once he said that, a thought went off in my mind that indeed therein lies the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is that many of the people who are involved in applying the truths of Christianity to the broader contiguous culture here in America particularly are lacking the theological basis. In fact, I remember this very, very clearly in speaking with Dr. LaHaye. He said, I reject any theological basis for mm-hmm. Christian activism in our culture. And of course, what he was afraid of at that point was a very stereotypical identification of theonomy. And I tried to explain to him at that time that there's a theological position that he can have and ought to have with respect to what he's doing. I mean, everything that we do ought to come out of our doctrine, out of
yes.
our theology. It's not like there's some vacuous area in our lives, particularly one as important as applying the truths of Christianity to our surrounding culture, and we can say that we don't have a theological basis for it. I thought that was silly, and so I tried to challenge him on that. And I said, just because there may be problems on one side of the theological spectrum does not mean that you have no theological basis whatsoever for what you're doing. But back to my point, it's that we have many, many people in the 80s particularly who just felt an urge to be deeply involved in the cultural problems that our nation was facing, particularly since Roe v. Wade in 73. But they didn't know why. They didn't have a solid biblical basis for why they were to be involved. And part of this problem was also precipitated by the fact that so many Christians from so many denominations were involved in the movement. And it was difficult to agree on a fundamental premise or a set of premises upon which they could operate in the culture. And it seems like they reverted to what LaHaye called Christian patriotism. Well, the problem is that in spiritual warfare, Christian patriotism is only going to take you so far.
Correct.
You're either going to have a solid theological, biblical basis, your feet anchored in the concrete of God's Word when the storm hits, or you're going to get blown away. And that's what happened to a lot of our brothers and sisters back there, I think, in the 90s, and that's perhaps what could very well have happened with Cal Thomas. And so I decided, you know, wait a minute, we have to go back. We have this tension that's in our community between those who are arguing in favor of the cultural mandate and those that are now saying, and by now I mean back in the early 90s when that book came out, forget the cultural mandate. We just need to go with the Great Commission. We just need to disciple, lead people to Christ, and forget, as you have said, why polish the brass on the sinking Titanic? And as I looked at it, I thought to myself, why are we faced with an either-or situation? We can have the Great Commission and the cultural mandate, and as I went to Scripture, I began to find, indeed, that there is a biblical basis for seeing a relationship, a close relationship between the cultural mandate of Genesis 1 and 2 and the Great Commission of Matthew 28 and in various other places as we see Jesus sending out his disciples.
Yes.
It's not an either-or situation. If you believe in the organic nature of Scripture, that what is established all the way back in the very early beginnings of Genesis and go all the way over into Revelation, you are consistently reformed in that respect, then you're going to find yourself tracing the cultural mandate of Genesis all the way over into the Great Commission of Matthew 28. And so that's what Earth Restored was meant to focus on, was a unified vision for both evangelism and discipleship, plus are affecting the culture for Christ, not either or, and addressing this problem that Cal Thomas had brought up.
That's excellent. Just an excellent perspective. Let's go now to The Road from Eden. Tell me about your book.
Yeah. Well, The Road from Eden is probably just a much, much more expanded version of Earth Restored. As you can see, what's happening here as the years progress, my thinking becomes larger and larger on this issue. For me, it's a lifelong journey of wanting to learn more and more and more and helping others understand and to teach them the things that I'm learning. And so once I put down the pen on Earth Restored, I picked up the books again and just began continuing to study, not satisfied at all with what I had learned to that point. The Road from Eden is a much more academically inclined book. It's first of all a history of the relationship of Christianity and culture from the time of Christ all the way to the present, and it mainly focuses on Western history. Now, there's also a theological section toward the end, and that theological section really represents mainly my own personal views. But it is a very, very comprehensive history of the relationship of the church and culture. And what I'm really trying to do in this book is not just simply give you a history. What I'm trying to do is give you a particular view of history through a very select lens. And that lens is placed in this question. How did the church, from the time of Jesus onward, react to the cultural mandate of Genesis 1 and 2? And so the history is really one of looking at how the church related to its surrounding culture through all these various periods of time. And as I began to write the book, what I began to discover is that there is not one expression of Christianity in culture. Rather, there are many. There could be as many as 20 or 30, but I come up with at least 12 in the book, and I have names that I ascribe to them. So in the early church, I call it Christianity the conqueror of culture, or perhaps in the Renaissance period, Christianity the reviver of culture, or my own personal view, I refer to as Christianity the builder of culture. And so we see over this course of a 2,000-year period many shifts occurring from time to time, all depending on the various pressures that are set on the church and also that the church is bringing to the culture. One of the things that's intrinsic to the book sort of following this the synthesis of Christianity and culture is that not only does the culture bear a great influence upon the church from age to age, but also Christianity, of course, bears a great influence upon the culture as well. And sometimes it's both. And the result of whatever that might be from age to age will be the result of what I call the various types, Christianity the builder of culture, Christianity the reviver of culture, and so forth. So it's a book that, from what I understand, has fallen into a few hands out there, and so far has been a blessing to people. Some of the reviews I've read have been fairly good, thank the Lord. And I'm just hoping that the book, like Earth Restored, is going to provide people the tools that they need to be able to do the work that the Lord Jesus Christ has given us, which is to proclaim His Lordship over all things. And that's a very, very important thing, very important thing to me.
I understand that you've been invited to speak at Princeton University as a result of the book. How did that come about?
Well, that's very, very interesting. Unbeknownst to me, I mentioned just a moment ago that the book has fallen into the hands of some people who were interestingly reading it and enjoying it, and that again is a great blessing to me. Apparently one of the people is on the faculty at Princeton Theological Seminary and read the book and sent it over to the people who are in charge of the annual Kuiper lecture series. And from there, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, or the listeners are aware of this, but every year the seminary at Princeton has a competition, and the person that that wins that competition in writing on a subject that is close to something that would be of the nature of Kuiper's theories, most essentially Common Grace, would be the keynote speaker. Well, my book was placed in the lineup of those that were being considered for the keynote address, and one day I received an email, and it was a representative of the theological seminary there, and I was being informed that my book was the runner-up. Road from Eden was runner-up, and I had been invited to speak. And so the woman who actually won the competition this year, I'm afraid I forget her name. I apologize for that. She's a novelist. She is giving the keynote address, and I will be giving the address on the evening prior. And I just must say that I am just thrilled that the book has been able to have that kind of an impact, particularly in an academic community of this nature at Princeton, to where I've been invited to come and speak, and on a subject that is so very exciting to me. I've been asked to speak on the subject of John Calvin and the relationship to music. And, of course, I shared that with my wife, And she said, well, that ought to take about 15 minutes. And I said, well, I bet I can spread it out maybe a little bit more than that. But I think as long as I'm talking on something that is related to Calvin and the arts or Calvin and culture,
yes.
They've asked me to do something on Calvin and music. I think they'd be happy with it. But that's how that came about. And I'll be going in this coming April. So it's a ways out yet, so I have time to prepare, and I'm very, very excited about that.
That is exciting. And just for those who don't know, what is the relationship of the Road from Eden with Whitfield Theological Seminary?
Well, that's great that you would ask that a question, because the Road from Eden started as a doctoral dissertation at Whitfield Theological Seminary. And when I presented it to you, it was under a different title. It was quite a bit larger at that time. You know, usually when you go to get your dissertation published, you have to enlarge on it. In my case, I had to trim it down quite considerably. But I want to thank you for the opportunity to have written that dissertation for you in the seminary, and because it's provided an opportunity now for the manuscript to take form in publication. And now in publication to be reaching many people.
Well, we highly recommend it. It's a well-written book, well-researched, and we enjoyed being able to go over that and award you, of course, the doctorate philosophy degree for that dissertational work.
Thank you.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back with Dr. Barber in a few moments.
Parents, are you looking for a college to send your children to in the near future? Hi, I'm Dr. Randall Talbot, the Executive Vice President and Academic Dean of Whitfield College. Let me share with you why I think you should consider Whitfield College. First, Whitfield brings a Christian college education home to you. We are a distant learning online institution. Second, Whitfield provides a biblical worldview college education. Third, affordability. Because we are a distance learning institution, we can provide a high academic education that you can afford. The average tuition for most online colleges is $300 or more per credit hour. At Whitfield, we charge $80 per credit hour. Fourth, graduates from Whitfield College are highly educated in the majors that we provide. We have graduates that have entered graduate schools all across the country in various different fields. Institutions like the University of Massachusetts of North Dartmouth, Liberty University Law School, and various seminaries. If you would like further information, you may visit the Whitfield College website at whitfieldcollege.org, or you may call the college offices at 863-683-7899. I am looking forward to hearing from you.
Dr. Barber, you've traveled doing mission work with pastors both in Uganda and Kenya. What circumstances led you to go there?
Well, that's a very interesting story, simply by virtue of the fact that about a year and a half ago, I just felt moved to prayer. More prayer in my life, and as I was praying, I was led to the scriptures one day and began to notice something of the spontaneity with which many men in scripture are following the Lord Jesus Christ. And I won't elaborate on that word spontaneity at this time, but just simply say this, that up until this point that I'm talking about, if you had presented to me the opportunity to do something in ministry or to go somewhere with you on a missions trip, etc., I would spend an exorbitant amount of time thinking about it and praying about it and talking with people about it. And many times by the time I was finished, it seemed like the opportunity had passed. And that was part of my struggle at that time. And I just said to the Lord in prayer one day, you know, the next opportunity that you present me,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to not take a whole lot of time, and if I sense that you're in it, I'm just going to say yes. Well, last year, our General Assembly of the PCA met in Orlando, and our church is in South Florida, and so we took our session on up there, and I ran into an old friend who happens to be with an organization called Equipping Pastors International. Now, this organization has an extremely interesting history, especially with respect to the former director of it, Dr. Jack Arnold. But as I was talking with one of the men back there, who incidentally, he's with EPI now full-time, but he was the pastor of the church where our family was attending in Oviedo, which is right outside of Orlando, during the time that I was serving Dr. Bill Bright at Campus Crusade for Christ. So I said to Jim, I said, how you doing? He said, great. He said, how would you like to go to Africa with us? I said, yeah. He said, are you sure you don't want to think about it? I said, I just did. So he said, okay. And the next thing I knew, I was planning on going over to Uganda and Kenya for 2 weeks to help train pastors and some Ugandan bishops who have been in the ministry, are in the ministry, but have great need still of doctrinal foundation and theological training. So that's how they came about.
Yeah, could you give us a short history to the work in Uganda and for the theological training that was being established there for these ministers to be properly trained for their office?
Well, the first place that I came into knowledge of the situation in Uganda goes all the way back to my seminary days at Westminster in Philadelphia, when one of my instructors was Dr. Jack Miller. Now, Miller had been working in Uganda when Idi Amin was dictator back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very, very bold man, Jack Miller. And he's written several important books and had a phenomenal influence on my life as a young man when I was at seminary. Well, of course, from this and other things came World Harvest Missions and his work in Uganda with a gentleman by the name of Kepa Sampani. And through channels related to Jack Miller, Dr. Henry Krabbendam, who was with Covenant College,
yes,
the PCA college in Lookout Mountain, Georgia, for 35 years, began going to Uganda. And in fact, Henry is over there right now. He just preached at our church about 4 months ago. In fact, he brought with him one of the Ugandan men who I got to know over there, and it was a great pleasure to have them with us. And Martin O.D. is his name. He stayed at our house, and we just had great fellowship together while Martin was here.
Mm.
And Henry, Jack Miller has since gone to be with the Lord, but Henry continues to do work over there training men in evangelism. And he is just raising up army after army of men to be proclamation evangelists, just lifting up the gospel in the nation, the troubled nation of Uganda. Now also Palmer Robertson, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yes, I am.
He is also over in Kampala. He has come over to the Africa Bible College. It's now spread over to, it's established a new post about 5 years ago in Kampala, now called Africa Bible University. And there's also a Westminster Seminary in Kampala. So there's quite a bit happening. Now, Equipping Pastors International is a very, very different kind of bird. Jack Arnold, who's an individual you may or may not know, one of the first contacts I had when I came to Orlando, started going over to Uganda and Kenya and holding informal conferences and training men in the ministry who needed theological in-depth training. And it just took off. And Jack and his wife, Carol, did this for several years until Jack passed away. Now, I'm just going to take a moment to tell you about Jack's passing, if you don't mind.
Sure, go right ahead.
Because it wound up being in the national news. I happen to have been preaching in Jacksonville when on this Sunday that this happened. But Jack was in the States, and he was preaching at the Covenant Presbyterian in Oviedo on this particular day. And he was preaching out of Paul, and he quoted John Wesley, who said, "Until my work on this earth is done, I am immortal. But when my work for Christ is done, I go to be with Jesus." And do you know that the second he said that, he went to be with Jesus?
I remember.
He passed away right there in the pulpit. The Lord took him right there. Well, from that point, Carol and many others came up behind and kept EPI going. And EPI is the organization that I went with last year to both Uganda and Kenya. And it's a very special relationship that EPI has with the people over there, and it's been extremely effective, and I'd be happy to tell you about that if you'd like to hear.
Sure, go right ahead.
Well, I think one of the things that that EPI has been able to do, and this is not to take anything away from anything that anyone else is doing over there ministerially, but one of the great problems that exists over in that area with respect to Christianity, quote-unquote, is the surgence of prosperity preaching. We know about that here in the United States of America,
yes.
The prosperity gospel. And EPI, just in the 12, 13 years that they've been in operation over in East Africa, with the many times that they've been able to get the people together and train them and equip them and spend time with them and walk with them and get to know them and expose them to the doctrines of grace, has had an immense impact. And this comes from the testimony of many of the pastors in Uganda and Kenya, has had an immense impact in pushing back, not only challenging, not only staving off, but pushing back the progress that this prosperity false preaching gospel has had in the past 30 years in East Africa. So that's a very important thing that they've been able to do, in addition to simply giving the men the basic tools that they need. With those tools has come the understanding, wait a minute, this business that we've been hearing through various and sundry sources about this prosperity gospel, quote-unquote, is not the true gospel. And so it's more and more becoming anathema in East Africa. And so we're very thankful for the impact that EPI is having.
Absolutely. As Christianity is advancing in Uganda, as you're talking about it, has it had any cultural impact on the people besides just their personal interest in Christianity and maturing and developing, learning more about their faith? Like, for example, has it impacted its culture, economics, political implications, anything within that construct?
Yeah, this is one of the big challenges, I think, that we face right now. I was having a conversation with one of the leading pastors in our denomination just a few days ago about this, and he was so excited to hear about the work that's going on in East Africa right now. And he said to me, you know, he said, "You're on the explosion. You're on the cusp of the explosion on the southern rim right now." In Uganda and Kenya. And as we began talking more about it, I shared with him that indeed Christianity is growing rapidly in both of these nations. And in there's really five nations that are in that particular region of East Africa. But I've only been to these two, and these are the two that I'm prayerfully going to return to in the fall. It has had basically no impact on the culture at all. And that refers to the various things that you've mentioned, economics, politics especially. There's an old saying, a mile wide and an inch deep.
Right.
And that is particularly the case with Christianity in Eastern Africa. Growing rapidly, but no depth. And part of the reason for this is what I have just mentioned a moment ago, which is this kind of superficial preaching and teaching that has been going on for a very long time. A very, very Arminian style of evangelism, of discipleship, coupled with an overemphasis on the prosperity proclamation, prosperity preaching, and a number of other things that have kept the ability of Christianity in this area from really growing deep into the soil of the nation. And you see, this is one of the things that I think that the Lord is calling me to do, as long as I have the ability, and He calls me to go over there, as long as I have the ability to go, is that when I went last fall, the subject that I decided to speak on, and unbeknownst to me, was this problem of being a mile wide and an inch deep.
Mm-hmm.
The subject I talked on was a subject that I love so much, which is the cultural mandate. And I began to speak on this topic of the cultural mandate to 25, 30 pastors in a room, and the implications of the gospel for the contiguous culture. You should have seen the expression on these men's faces. Mm. I had man after man come up to me after each and every lecture, and I would lecture 4 and 5 times a day, say to me, I have been in the ministry, or I've been a Christian for 10, 20, 30 years, and I have never once heard about the cultural mandate. Not once have I ever heard about a biblical world and life view. Not once. So when I heard that, I thought to myself, herein lies the problem.
Yes.
You know, we have a lot of different problems going over there in East Africa that I could talk to you about. But the most fundamental right now, this is not a place that the gospel is having trouble getting into. Oh, it's spreading like wildfire. The problem is that the fire is almost out of control.
Mm.
And we have to get light coupled with this fire.
Yes.
And rooted deep into the soil of that nation, into the soil of the hearts of those people.
Absolutely. That's excellent. So where do you see then the mission work going in the next few years in Uganda?
Well, I think that, again, Lord willing, and I can only speak for myself, if I'm able to continue to go back, in Uganda in particular, I have the opportunity to speak to a number of bishops. Last year, I was invited to speak to about, I would say, 20 bishops who represented many, many thousands of Christians. Now, in Kenya, I spoke to pastors, but in Uganda, I was speaking mainly to bishops. And they were so excited about the issue about biblical worldview and the cultural mandate and again, you could just see their eyes opening to the thought of a comprehensive Christianity.
Yes.
They wanted me to come back this year and speak to some key groups. And so I'm scheduled to go back there the second week of September of this year to speak to two groups of leaders. Who the one of the bishops last year has set up for me to speak to, and he believes that these are key leaders not only in the church but also in the political sphere, but who are Christians, and he wants them to hear what the scriptures have to say about this comprehensive worldview type Christianity. So I'm very excited about that. In Kenya, I've been asked to help start a Reformed Theological Seminary there. Earlier you had mentioned the fact that I was teaching at a seminary there. Well, the fact is that we're hoping that this seminary is going to take root over there. But right now it's just on paper. It is tentatively called the Reformed Theological Seminary of Nairobi, and it's the vision of several men who are part of the African Evangelical Presbyterian Church. It's a conservative Presbyterian denomination in Kenya, and again, as a result of the work of Equipping Pastors International, now these men are really getting a vision for education, for the culture, for instructing their own people, and now have a thirst for the first Reformed seminary in the nation of Kenya.
That's outstanding.
And as I was there on my last day, I had one of the elder statesmen of this denomination approach me and say, John, you know, Jack Arnold is no longer with us. He's with the Lord. And we would be talking to him right now about this, but you're the man who's here right now. And we would like to ask you if you could help us, if at all possible, to get this seminary going. Well, I have to tell you, I was, just when I heard the mention of this potential seminary in Kenya, I was excited.
Yes.
It just grabbed me instantly. And so I came home and began praying about it and thinking about it, and in the last few months have written the foundational documents to help start the seminary. Now, it's called a seminary, but understand that many of these men who are going to be taking part in the first classes have what are called diplomas in theology.
Right.
And so what the school is going to do most likely is offer bachelor degrees in theology, and then some years down the road offer master divinity degrees. And so with that in view, I've been writing up the materials and was then asked to come and teach the first class. And the first class will be in hermeneutics, and we're going to be using a very basic text. I've written up the materials, and I can't wait to get over there.
Gotta
tell you, and to sit down with those men and lead the very, think how exciting this is, the very first class of the very first Reformed Theological College / Seminary in the nation of Kenya.
Yeah, that's great.
That's great.
Absolutely. Dr. Barber will be back after this break.
A Puritan's Mind is a website dedicated to the gospel of Jesus Christ and the glory of God. Located at www.apuritansmind.com, its purpose is to help those visitors, over 50 million since 1998, to enjoy God and His gracious gospel of redemption through Jesus Christ. It's called A Puritan's Mind because it houses one of the largest selections of writings from the 17th century, covering Christian authors such as Alexander Henderson, Samuel Rutherford, Jeremiah Burroughs, and a whole host of Westminster ministers of the Puritan age. But that's not all. There are sections on the website on church history, historical theology, and doctrinal aspects covering justification, the doctrines of grace, family worship, Christian stewardship, and much, much more. A Puritan's Mind has even reached out over into the Reformed book market with Puritan publications. We have published over a dozen works, including The Covenant of God by Thomas Blake, and one of the most popular introductions to covenant theology called A Simple Overview of Covenant Theology by Dr. Matthew McMahon. All works are available in digital formats as well. You can even acquire an all-in-one special DVD that contains many out-of-print works, sermons, and books from the Puritans and Reformers. Visit us at www.apuritansmind.com for more information, and do all to the glory of God.
We're back with Dr. Barber. Dr. Barber, would you personally talk to us about what you see as being the outstanding challenges to the gospel in East Africa currently?
Well, there are many, many challenges. As I said just a little bit ago, Christianity is spreading rapidly in both Uganda and Kenya, in East Africa generally. And so when we think about challenges, we have to think about them in a different way.
Yes.
One of the biggest problems that the biblical gospel faces in this part of the world is what's called African traditional religion. I just simply call it ATR.
Mm-hmm.
African traditional religion is pluralistic. It assumes that there's many ways to God. And it really stems from the African tribal culture, which is still very, very much present in East Africa and is very syncretistic. It's an amazing visit to East Africa, because on the one hand, you feel like you're definitely in the 21st century, but then on the other hand, you feel like you're in the 14th century. In East Africa is the picture of somebody driving by in a BMW or a Lexus, right past a woman walking along the street with a big basket of fruit on her head. And everything is extreme polarities, extreme poverty, extreme wealth, extreme warfare, extreme peace in sections. And this polarity is really also seen in the fact that you have Christianity on the one hand, but then you also have this ancient forms of tribal culture that are still having a very palpable effect on absolutely everything that goes on in these nations, from the highest echelon of politics to the church to the marketplace to the street corners. And I think that the great challenge is seen in the fact that it is highly, highly typical for Africans. And here's where the problem really emerges, Dr. Talbot. It is highly typical for Africans to identify their tribal customs and traditions with Christianity.
They're incompatible.
Yeah, they're not compatible, but they think that they are. And it's almost like in many nations, perhaps in a moment we'll talk about Italy, where the Roman Catholic Church and the culture are virtually synonymous. And in this nation, we have much of the same kind of problem, but not nearly as strong as it is in East Africa, where the tribal customs and traditions can weave themselves into biblical doctrine in such a way that the customs and the traditions will actually take precedent. It's the very kind of thing that Paul was warning us against in his letters over and over and over again. And Jesus warning us about the leaven of the Pharisees, how this little bit of leaven can get in and just ruin the whole lump. So, It's an odd mixture. African traditional religion can comprise fetishism, can comprise religious pluralism, idolatry, ancestor worship, various and sundry sorts of things. And you see, one of the things that I think is very important from an evangelistic viewpoint, and also from the viewpoint of teaching people a biblical worldview especially, is that it's not helpful to evangelize a nation and add more converts into a system that is systemically pluralistic.
Right.
Because all you're really doing is adding new wine into old wineskins. What we need to do, and this is why, again, the whole aspect of worldview is so vitally important, we've got to actually go down to the foundations and we've got to rip them out. And we've got to relay them in East Africa. There's much ministry going on in East Africa. Many people are becoming Christians. Many churches are raising up. Many denominations. Much activity. But so much of it is adding new wine into old wineskins. And so the people are confused. And they need a fresh look at what it really means to be a Christian, as opposed to the cultural traditions that are systemic to East Africa.
You're actually almost having to teach them what is wrong in order then to come back and teach them what is right.
Precisely. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I was talking to the people about last year. You know, I went over there with a packet full of lectures, not knowing what I was walking into. And when I got there, I realized half of what I was going to say was worthless.
Right.
Because it was for an American audience.
Yes.
And I'm used to speaking to an American audience. So as I began to listen to the people, I began hearing about this problem. And so I began adjusting my lectures to talk about specifics dealing with, okay, let's isolate places in your churches, in your denomination, in your personal Christian walk, where, you know, this or that tribe is still exerting an influence via mysticism,
mm-hmm.
or via ancestor worship, or via some other way. And let's address that. So, yeah, you have to tear down before you build up in many cases.
Let me ask you this question. With this African tradition religion that you have there, what form of Christianity actually came in its earlier time period and introduced itself into that culture among those people?
Well, you're going back many, many years. Of course, all the way dating to the time of the church fathers, there was influence going all the way down into, of course, northern Africa with Augustine.
Yes.
But even further than that, following the rivers, bringing Christianity down all the way into the time of Constantine. But
would Roman Catholicism be dominant in some of these areas?
Yeah, it had been dominant for many, many years. Roman Catholicism had been dominant for a very, very long time. Not so much anymore. Part of the breakup of Roman Catholicism in Central Africa, and this is also true in northern parts of Africa, is the various influences, such as Muslim influences.
Right.
The very thing that I was just talking about a moment ago, which is the tribes. Not only do you have the influence of African traditional religion in Christianity, but you have the warfare amongst tribes. And when the tribes decide that they're going to have a war, everybody has to clear out. And the church, the Roman Catholic Church, was simply not able to set up the kind of roots that it needs in order to purvey its teachings and its authority in that area when it was dealing with cross currents that were constantly challenging its authority. And when it comes down to Roman, and you can underscore Roman Catholicism versus African, underscore African, traditional religion, it's the African that's going to win out every time.
Mm-hmm.
So over the centuries, and even in the last few years, since 2007 in Kenya, where there was a huge tribal warfare over what is believed to have been a stolen election, some of the more older established churches, such as Roman Catholicism, but also Episcopalian and Lutheran, were basically chased out of there. Because of the uprisings and the insurrections that were happening in the area. More recently, I would say that influences coming from the Protestant side, Mennonite, Plymouth Brethren, certainly Pentecostal with the prosperity gospel, and more recently Presbyterianism. You would be interested to know that the African Evangelical Presbyterian Church in Kenya that I'm working with is the old Bible Presbyterian Church that goes back to Westminster Theological Seminary with Carl McIntyre.
Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, it was the Bible Presbyterian Church that sent missionaries many years over to Kenya and started a group over there, which has now become the AEPC. Now, the AEPC no longer has links with the Bible Presbyterian Church, but this is just an example of one of the more recent influences in that area.
We'll be back with Dr. Barber after this break.
Do you enjoy reading theological papers and articles on the Reformed faith? Then go to Theology Explained website and browse through the various articles, position papers, and research materials that are available. While there, you can participate in blogging on various topics of interest and interacting with others who are interested in the same subject matter. Go to theologyexplained.ning.com. theologyexplained.ning.com, and become a part of their active community.
And we're back with Dr. John Barber. Dr. Barber, you also have a ministry in Italy. You kind of mentioned that. Would you describe that for us?
I'd be happy to. It's very different from my involvement in East Africa. I've been invited the last couple of summer American exchange students, mainly college age, over to Italy and give them teaching tours of Rome and Florence and some of the outlying areas. And there's a school over there in San Lorenzo in the northern part of Italy, not far from Venice, that that I work with. And these are Reformed folks, interestingly. In fact, the fellow that I work with there is a graduate of Reformed Theological Seminary in Orlando. And his father has been a church planter over there for many, many years. They're both Italians.
Mm.
So we spend about a week in class, and I teach Renaissance art history and architecture, one of my favorite hobbies. And if you read Road from Eden, you'll find that the Renaissance gets most of the chapters.
Yes.
About four chapters, just given to the Renaissance because I love that period so much.
Yes.
But then we take the time to go out and actually see places. And students prepare lectures themselves, and I just have a ball the whole time. It's just a great time. So it gives me an opportunity to do something than to take part in another aspect of culture, the relationship of Christianity and culture that I enjoy and like teaching, and also gives me an opportunity to be around young people and listen to them and find out where they're at, and provides opportunity for discipleship at times, and it's very exciting. So that's what I am hoping to be doing in November this year.
You're going to be on the road traveling quite a bit then overseas.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Very, very. That's very exciting, though, brother. We'd like to get updates, if we could, from you in the future on that, so we can know how the ministries are developing and how especially the mission work in East Africa is going forward, and the seminary as it gets off the ground. And Lord willing, you have the opportunity to train a lot of young men for the ministry and establish a strong theological foundation there in the Reformed faith among those churches. We'll be back with Dr. Barber after this break with the last portion of our broadcast.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from the website Theology Today Apologetic Ministries. It's a website from a Reformed point of view that deals with expressions of Christianity that aren't Reformed. Movements such as the Word of Faith and the Signs and Wonders, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Roman Catholicism, as well as hyperpreterism. With over 400 articles, the Theology Today Apologetic Ministries podcast, as well as videos, I trust that you'll find everything that you need to make a sound decision whether or not to follow these movements. Thanks for stopping by. And now back to True Believer with Dr. Kenneth Talbot on the Whitfield Radio Network.
Dr. Barber, you're releasing a new book with a real provocative title. Could you tell us a little something about that?
Be happy to. Again, it's an interesting title. It's called My Almost for His Highest. And, of course, that's a play on words. With respect to Oswald Chambers' classic, My Utmost for His Highest.
Yes.
The full title of the book is My Almost for His Highest, Evangelicalism's Abandonment of Truth in Its Quest for Success. So it's a rather loaded title. And basically what it comes from is just another area of interest I think that every pastor ought to have, which is the state of evangelicalism, quote-unquote, in our country and around the world today. I remember many years ago when Cornelius Van Til was living. He walked into a class at Westminster Seminary. He was no longer teaching. But he pointed his finger at us and he said, "You men are Reformed evangelicals." And I never forgot that. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly Reformed, and I certainly am evangelical in the sense that I believe that all that is fit for life and for salvation is found in the gospel, and that we ought to be busy about our master's work, his great commission, and getting that gospel. But evangelicalism, it seems, in recent years has depreciated. Now, I'm well aware of the fact that there's a lot of books. John MacArthur, for one, has had a book out for some time on this issue called Ashamed of the Gospel.
Yes.
Going all the way back to Evangelicalism Divided. Many books on this subject. So why did I write this? It's because in reading a lot of these other books, I found, and this is particularly evident to me during the time, the 7 or 8 years that I was serving with Campus Crusade, and people were reading these books, they had difficulty understanding them. And they would come to me and they would say, "John, what is this author talking about in this particular area?" And it was very loquacious, very verbose, and I would very literary, written a very literary style, and I would put it in simple terms, and all of a sudden I would see the person get it and understand the point. So I decided if ever the Lord were to lead me to write a book like this on this subject, I would write it in a very, very simple style. And that's one of the differences in the ones that are like it. Another difference in it is that I talk about individual areas of church life that I think are in need of rebuilding, in need of reformation. Things like church discipline, for example, worship, various other and sundry areas. And another difference is this, is that just rather than sort of leave everything burned over, I give you a plan for how to come back, a plan for revival and reformation that's based upon the doctrines of grace. And so the whole last section of what is really not a very long book, only 12 chapters, and the chapters are really not very long. I want this to be an easy read, both in its length and in its style, for people who want to get to the point. The thing I want to do here at the end is that I want to give a great encouragement to the church to say that the Lord is jealous over his holy name and that he is coming again in reviving power and to believe that God is truly going to do this in our day, that we are going to see another great awakening, if I could use that term, in our day of pastors and missionaries and evangelists and people of God rising up and recapturing the biblical truths that have made Christianity what it is, the life-changing power of God, and that if in some sense this little effort of mine can help precipitate that, then all the more better.
We'll be looking forward to see that book in publication.
Yeah.
How soon do you think that'll be available?
It is actually available, I believe, by the end of the summer, first of the fall.
Okay, where can we purchase your books from if some of our listeners wanted to buy your books and review them?
Well, any of them can be picked up on the internet. Anytime I want to purchase a book, I just Google the name and I can find it. But Academica Press is the publisher of The Road from Eden. And the easiest place that the Road from Eden can be purchased is from the Westminster Bookstore at Westminster Theological Seminary, or on Monergism. Perhaps some of your listeners are familiar with Monergism.com. Monergism and Westminster Bookstore also carry a new booklet that I've just written called Art to the Glory of God. It's a very short booklet, about 32 pages, that talks about practical things that artists can do to do compositions to the glory of God.
Oh, excellent.
Art to the Glory of God. Again, available on both of those websites. I also have an internet site of my own that I could share with you.
Please,
where all of these books are available.
Please do.
It is called roadfromeden.com. www.roadfromeden.com. Now, on that site, there's links to where you can get the books. There's also numerous articles that I've written about African traditional religion, about art history, about various and sundry sorts of things. And also, you can track on there what I'm doing in Kenya, Uganda, in Italy, and in America.
That's wonderful, brother. That'll be exciting. And listen, we want to thank you. We're out of time for being with us on True Believer. And we will have you back once you're back from your trips. We'd love to have a time for an update. Give us an overview of what's happening and what is happening both in Uganda and Kenya. And, of course, also with Italy and then how your publications are coming along at that point in time.
Well, I pray the Lord has great blessings on you, Dr. Talbot. I really want to thank you for the availability that you've given me to your listeners.
Absolutely. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us. And if you would, please go to the Whitfield Radio website, join up to be a member, or if you like, go to Facebook and you can join Whitfield Radio on the Facebook.com program. Lord bless, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Whitfield Radio. Whitfield Radio is a division of Whitfield College and Theological Seminary. Music is provided by our friend, Dr. Phil Kagi, and we encourage you to visit his website at philkagi.com. philkagi.com. This is Dr. Bill Sullivan saying thank you for joining us, and check out our website for the next scheduled show. Have a blessed day.
peace there for you right until the